Hello, everybody. This is Bill Cameron from The Drive. Podcasts of The Drive are presented by Southeastern Industrial Contractors, now hiring for great-paying skilled trade positions. Call 334-209-6355 to learn more. Thanks for listening.
Live from Auburn, the sports capital of Alabama, this is The Drive. The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390, toll free at 888-382-7502, or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Hello, everybody. Welcome in to the Thursday edition of The Drive. Hope everybody, had decent roofs or protection.
Gutters
this morning. My goodness, my gutters.
Yeah, how your gutters doing, Bill?
They're overflowing. Oh, they're overflowing. Matt says he's going to come over and help.
Washed out the snakes.
If there were any there, they drown. I guarantee you that. Man, we had some serious rain, but the good news, the bridge is open. Man, it is so much of a relief.
Justin, this has been a major
for the last 2 weeks. I mean, really, mm-hmm. anybody who has to cross that Wright's Mill Road Bridge.
Bill Cameron.
It's really tough. And I mean, if you live...
was a big story last
week.
We're
so much... We are, even though there are a lot of people that are much closer, but we're closer to that by miles mm-hmm. than there is either direction, either Moores Mill or coming up South College. So it is really, it's been more than a slight inconvenience. I mean, it's put in, have to drive 5 to 8 mm-hmm. miles out of the way every day.
So was it this morning?
Just get in town. Sometime
this morning.
I came in town this morning. Butch Thompson had a little time with the media this morning at 8:45. Man, I mean, I got out of the car and that's when it really started pouring. Fortunately, it broke a little bit right when Butch finished, and the bridge was still closed when I went back home a little after 9 this morning. So sometime after 9 this morning, my wife had left at about the same time, and she called me and asked me if the bridge was open. And I said, well, it wasn't when I came back. So she came around the long way. But then I left a little early today just to make sure, but appreciate the job that the Department of Transportation, I mean, they've been working on it day and night. Folks on the interstate will be pleased to know that the barrier has been removed as well. So now there are two lanes heading north on I-85. So it's great to have everything opened back up. So I'm very, very thankful for that. But yeah, we had a good bit of rain this morning, and probably going to get some more from sometime tonight through tomorrow as well.
Disrupted the events that were taking place over at the softball field.
And oh, yeah.
SEC softball Absolutely. Tournament action. They're going to try to get, I believe, the semifinals were scheduled for tomorrow, and they are still scheduled for tomorrow, but they've had to move some games that were going to be played today mm-hmm. to tomorrow morning. And so I believe there are two games scheduled for today. We were off the air when Auburn, Georgia ended.
By a long shot. Yeah. It didn't end till around after 9 o'clock last night. A pair of 14-inning games.
There had never been a 14-inning game in the SEC tournament ever.
And there were two yesterday.
And there were two of them yesterday. Remember, folks,
softball is a 7-inning game.
Yeah, they played two games.
So there's like two doubleheaders played yesterday.
Two doubleheaders, basically, with Georgia walking off Auburn in the
man. What a crushing loss. Auburn hit. Auburn gets a 3-run homer in the top of the 14th because it was a 2-2 ball game after 13.
Looked like a magical moment in the top of the 14th with the team taking the 3-run lead and the celebration. But
Georgia gets a three run shot and then a solo homer to walk it off.
And then a walk off solo home run. So, but yeah, there's two games that are going to be played. I think they're going to try to start the action during our show today, about an hour in, and they're going to try to play two games tonight and two games tomorrow. Semifinals still in place, but yeah, the rain affecting the ability to play the SEC softball tournament as scheduled earlier today in Auburn.
Right. We'll talk whatever you would like sports wise. I've got a feeling we'll talk a good bit about the transfer portal. There's a lot has changed since we left the air yesterday. As we welcome in Justin Ferguson from the Auburn Observer here on the Thursday Drive. Ferg, how you doing?
I'm doing all right.
We'd love for you to join in. We'll give you the numbers. Then we'll, in case you've, you know, haven't been able to get in touch with anything, maybe, I don't know, something knocked out your internet or whatever. But we'll give you the numbers, and we'd love to hear from you. You can join us on the Drive Hotline, sponsored by Skybar, 334-321-1390.
You can also text the show if your phone's still working. I don't know exactly. I think the phones are all still working here in Townville. 334-564-1840.
I hope so.
The Drive text box. That's presented by our friends at Southeastern Industrial Contractors. They also sponsor the podcast, available however you listen to podcasts. Big shout out to Derek and everybody at Southeastern Industrial Contractors.
All right, so yesterday when we left the air yesterday, we were still talking about
the two basketball transfers?
Yes. Yeah. Jordan, talking targets. About Jordan Ivy Curry and Achor.
Yes.
Jordan Ivy Curry is off the board.
Committed to UCF.
Committing to Central Florida. And
still Johnny Dawkins at UCF.
I think it is. And Achor may not be coming in for a visit. So I mean it's almost back to the drawing board. Who's next? On the list.
On Achor. Now Ivy Curry felt like the kind of guy that, you know, it was similar to Duke Miles, where if somebody who could offer, if a major conference team could offer more of a guaranteed spot, more playing time, Auburn might have to prepare. I guess it's similar with Achor as well. Like when you're, I mean, Achor felt like somebody who, and I don't want to talk about it too much in the past tense because Auburn still maybe in the mix for Achor, but that's somebody who felt more than Ivy Curry or Duke Miles, like somebody who could be coming in competing for a starting role,
right,
and a starter share of the minutes. Even with Chaney Johnson coming back, I think that Achor and Chaney Johnson would have been competing to be the number one power forward on this team. If somebody can offer Achor, I don't know, like that one felt more like, well, Auburn, you know, maybe you're not talking about Auburn needing depth. You're not talking about Auburn needing to round out a seventh or eighth, ninth man in the rotation. So maybe they got a shot, but you're competing with everybody for a player like Achor, because when you have a season like that at the mid-major level, a lot of teams are going to be wanting your services.
And the situation there may not just be as simple as that either. Justin, I mean, it seems like this may be a situation with transcripts and transfers, which Auburn has run into. Yes, and when you hear that sometimes, I don't want people to jump to the conclusion that, oh, he's got bad grades. That may not be it at all.
Yeah, yeah.
And I have not heard that is the case at all. But there are certain majors that it's really difficult to transfer in and have that student-athlete still be making his progress toward a degree.
Correct. And, yeah, we've seen this happen in the past. You know, with other sports and other things, with Auburn football has been a big one with that recently. But yeah, I think this is one of those things that the other day I saw somebody writing about this. But it's kind of one of those unintended consequences of everybody being able to move.
Right,
you're looking for a guy like Achor. You know, here's a guy from an international player. He comes to America for high school. He goes to junior college. He goes to Samford. And it's like when you make those moves, like, you know, it's a lot different than a kid coming just straight, you know, from high school to one school going all the way through. When you start throwing in different schools and different types of schools and different majors and stuff like that in the mix, they still got to be, you know, on track to graduate. And that's not always the case when you try to make those transfers. We'll see. I mean, we've heard situations in the past like this where it fell a little iffy and then it worked itself out
right
somehow, and others not. So, you know, that one's just, you just got to keep an eye
but
on.
Weren't academics cited as the primary reason Auburn had to back off Desi Sills a couple of years ago?
Yes.
Wasn't that a similar situation?
Mm-hmm.
Desi Sills, yes, the Arkansas transfer, who I want to say
he finished at Arkansas State.
And I want to say Desi Sills' commitment is what got Trey Alexander to back off of Auburn and ended up at Creighton. And then Auburn doesn't get Desi Sills in part. I think this is largely.
And they get Katie Johnson instead.
They get Katie. Did they get Katie Johnson instead, or was he? Okay, because I know they added more yeah. moves after yeah. Desi Sills after it didn't work out with Sills. But that's a we've had instances in the past where even as far as players who were committed, like publicly committed to Auburn, had to make alternate arrangements, and at least
obviously
the rumor and innuendo.
Obviously, Grayson McCall was the other big one there a couple years ago.
Right.
Or a couple cycles ago.
The insinuendos would be that maybe academics played a role in something like in some of those players not being able to fulfill their commitment and actually come to Auburn.
Yeah. So as Justin said, I haven't heard that it's a done deal, but that does appear to be a reason for no visit by the big guy.
I'm still sort of blurry on, I'm still sort of fuzzy on. So he could have, it could be a situation where a player is on track to graduate in a major that Auburn doesn't offer,
right?
And so therefore,
that can still keep you from being eligible.
Yeah. Because
you got to be progressing.
Yes, right. It's got to be academic progress. Some people think that it's just a matter of, you need to get accepted.
Or you need to have so many hours. Yes. Or what it's hours toward a degree. And if that degree that he is pursuing at one place is not offered at a second place, it's difficult.
You wouldn't worry
to still be, making that progress.
You wouldn't worry as much about the core classes because he transferred from a junior college to a D1 program.
No.
And if you can make that
usually,
jump,
it would be easier for someone who's only been, out of high school for a year, maybe two.
Right, but once you're a third or fourth year player with classes in the major, that can lead to that can lead to situations where, maybe you have to be more selective about where you can go, or some places are. There were rumors, by the way, that John L. Davis, I believe, was another player who had a couple of others before committing to Arkansas this week. The transfer from Florida Atlantic had. Apparently, the other places, people thought he was going to follow Dusty May from FAU to Michigan. That that was something that evaporated that unraveled in a way that had people thinking maybe academics played a role in that as well. It's something people don't think about as much. You're right with the transfer portal, but if you don't have the credits towards graduation, then a school can't take you.
Yeah, so we'll see if Auburn has some other options. One name, and I don't know if there's anything viable or about this. I just got a text saying, would Auburn be interested in Dylan Mitchell? Well, who wouldn't be interested in Dylan Mitchell? But he's another guy. I guess maybe since it's that four spot, that you might be able to. Again, sort of have the same kind of situation we were talking about with Achor, where he could come in and compete and win the starting job. Here's a guy that was one of the top prospects in the country just a couple of years ago, a consensus five-star McDonald's All-American who's been at Texas for the last couple of years.
It's a little surprising with Achor that he just finished his fourth year of college basketball, and I can't seem to find any information about his major. I guess that's a selective thing.
Some schools may list it, other schools may not.
It's not suspicious. It's just odd. It's odd. I was trying to find. Let's find out what he's majoring in. Maybe see if that's. But there's some schools are more selective about that. And Achor finishing his fourth year at Samford. He would have 1 year of eligibility left in college basketball wherever he goes. The question is where's that going to be?
All right. So that sort of is the situation there in the front court. In the back court. A lot of buzz because Auburn zooming yesterday with a player who was very, very highly touted coming out of high school, committed to a couple of schools before signing with Pitt. Dior Johnson then ran into legal troubles at Pitt and has been at junior college. And he's a guy that, there's no question, comes with baggage, and there's going to be if he signs with a major conference school or whatever school he signs with is going to be under a lot of scrutiny.
Back in December, Dior Johnson pleaded guilty to two misdemeanor charges of simple assault. And this is December 2022.
Right.
Dior Johnson pleaded guilty to two misdemeanor.
That was his freshman, as he was starting his freshman year.
Misdemeanor charges of simple assault and strangulation. He had originally been accused of a felony aggravated assault charge. As well as unlawful restraint and false imprisonment. His sentence included probation and a mental health evaluation and treatment. His charge as part of the deal, his charge was reduced from a felony to a misdemeanor, but it did spell the end of his time at Pitt. He was the number 38 player in the ESPN 100 coming out of high school before signing with the Pitt Panthers.
Yeah, he's been at Clarendon College. Where is Clarendon? Okay, I was not familiar with Clarendon.
Yeah, that's a new one for me as well. But yeah, I believe it's in Texas.
He was the leading scorer in the nation in junior college.
Yeah, really, really, really high level talent. I mean, that's
he was rated by some as the number one point guard coming out in 22.
We haven't really seen, and I guess you know programs all over the country are grappling with. When you have a player with a checkered legal past, and I think especially when that past involves violent crime, the question of how forgiving, you know, how eager are you to give a second chance? Bruce hasn't really had to ask. You know, there hasn't been, to my knowledge, a player convicted of a violent crime in his past that Bruce Pearl has had to decide whether or not to bring into the program.
I don't think so.
That would be the case with Dior Johnson. Now, it was a couple of years ago. He's played college basketball elsewhere since the incident.
Pitt brought him back.
Right.
Redshirted him, and at the end of the season, he left school there.
Well, I believe they had a change in the administration, and the administration pretty much decided that he would no longer be a student at Pitt.
Yeah, and that's the thing. Whether it's Auburn or anybody else, there's going to be a lot of scrutiny. When you talk about what Dior Johnson pled guilty to, it is heavy, heavy stuff. And, there's a reason why he's in junior college. There's a reason why he scored like 30 points a game in junior college. And yet.
And there's also a reason why he hasn't been linked to any school up until now.
And he played for a bunch of high schools as well. He bounced around a lot.
That's not committed. As uncommon. I mean,
but it's just one of those things where it's a lot of, there's a lot of there that you could see. You know, whether it's Auburn, like I said, whether it's Auburn or anybody else, you got to be really, really thorough when you deal with, you know, trying to bring in a player like this. And additionally, you got to be prepared for what happens next because it's, like you said, Bill, a ton of scrutiny, especially with the type of crime that Dior Johnson was charged with and pled guilty to.
I think it's one thing if a player has a criminal past. I think that when the crimes are violent or sexual in nature, it's a little bit different. And I think there are programs that probably would not that would close the door on it. Just sight unseen, say, oh, well, he confessed to this. He was convicted of this. That's alone. But it's more nuanced. And Bruce Pearl, he'll ultimately, among other people at Auburn, will make the decision. Sure. With all the facts,
whether or not to continue with this. This was a Zoom meeting. If we hear that Dior Johnson is visiting, then you'll know that Auburn, is taking that next step. But again, I mean, I can understand when there is a talent like this. That you at least want to you want to see, is there more to the story than what you've read?
Yeah, I mean to my knowledge, I mean there has not been. I mean Chad Baker Mazar had been to a couple of schools, but I don't want to equate that with the legal history of a Dior Johnson.
Would be a very unique case.
Yeah, it's something different than really any other player Bruce Pearl to this point has recruited in his Auburn tenure.
334-321-1390. We're just underway here on the Thursday Drive. Love for you to join in as we continue.
It's time to stop dealing with unreal. The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390, toll free at 888-382-7502, or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into the drive here on this Thursday afternoon. Bill, Dan, Justin Ferguson from the Auburn Observer, Drew at the controls. And again, yeah, we'd love for you to join in, give us your thoughts on anything going on in the world of sports. And yeah, the NIL and the transfer.
Two really interesting conversations during the commercial break, but I thought the one that.
Yeah. Well, I was just telling you, I mean, that, all right, went over just before the skies opened this morning to just see what Butch Thompson had to say about the team heading to Missouri. And, you know, afterwards, I mean, he was getting ready and looking a little tired. And, you know, he was just commenting, and this was really not on the record. I don't want to quote him on really anything. But, I mean, as you – I would guess it shouldn't be a surprise that any coach these days is really struggling with how to manage their roster. And, I mean, just – I mean, Butch admitted, I mean, he's – it's tough sleeping when you're going through tough times like Auburn is, but then you're also dealing with NIL and the transfer portal. One of the things he did say is, you know, if there were one or the other, maybe it would be easier. But when you've got both and you're trying to recruit and Auburn has a very highly touted signing class coming in.
This is a guy who's been a college baseball coach since 1993.
For a long time.
Like, yes. I mean, you think about the way the industry has changed a lot in his tenure. I do wonder, other people have raised this point. I think Marcello wrote a piece about with the trends in college athletics now. Maybe it's Justin Lee talking about like the if development is your strength.
That's been one of Butch's, I mean, strong points and something that he really, really believes in, and
how can you not? I mean, compared to 10 years ago or 20 years ago or 30 years ago, the development aspect of this versus the recruiting aspect of this, and it's now, I mean, it's great if you can develop, but if you don't have players right now,
that's like, right.
It doesn't matter.
If they're not developed right now, you're probably not going to win enough, and you won't be around.
Yeah.
He was just talking about the decisions, the dilemmas with freshmen coming in. You want to bring them along slowly because freshmen aren't ready to just jump into the SEC in baseball. I mean, most aren't. There are a few, very, very few that are.
Yeah, because if you have the talent level, you're probably not playing college baseball.
Well, you might in the SEC. You might. I mean, they're
not a ton. Like,
no, you're
like,
right.
Like it's not like basketball or even football where you just like
you have to
throw them in and just
no,
say,
no,
hey,
that's right.
It.
So I mean, you'd like to bring them along slow,
but if there's a
thought, you know, now with the transfer portal, it's like, well, if you don't play them as much as they would like, they're gone. Yeah. And the other thing is,
Justin, do you think it'd be good? I want to get the recruiting point. Right. Do you think it'd be good in general if student athletes committed to play, like out of high school, if you were committing to play for 2 or 3 years at a place instead of 1 year,
even if I'm
a player movement guy, like I get the problem. You know, if you're unhappy in a situation, it's probably best for all parties involved that you bounce at the same time.
A lot of times you're unhappy when you go to when you're in a new system, new arena. I mean, you go to a new place, new job, new whatever. It takes a while.
Yeah, maybe you shouldn't walk out during the first day.
And you may have to get over the feeling of uncomfortability or whatever there early on before things go well.
Freeze has talked about contracts, and I think that's just knowing how long you are going to have somebody or have a good feeling of how long you're going to have somebody, I think would be pretty crucial. I mean, because when you talk about a roster building standpoint in college football, I mean, or in professional sports, you know how long you have control over
a guy's future. Until they reach a certain point. So.
Yeah. So I think it's better that way because if you have what you have right now where guys can go come and go as they please, it, you know, is it more fair to players in the old system? Sure. But what the thing about it is that it makes the construction and management of a roster so chaotic, which I think is to the detriment of the sport in general.
Sometimes it's to the detriment of the athletes. They may not realize it, but sometimes you have to go through a little bit of a tough time, and then if you see something, see some progress, it's like then you appreciate what you went through. But if every time it's not going so well, you can bounce. Especially if you can bounce.
That was the whole reason why people had to sit out. It was to deter people from just feeling like they can just go wherever they please. Well, there's not a whole lot of legal defense behind that.
No.
And that's why I got struck down. Okay, so if that's the case, you need to have some sort of what would be a legal structure to ensure that you kind of know what you're dealing with when it comes to your roster construction, where you're in football and just say, hey, we know that you're going to be here for 2 or 3 years, or hey, if you just want to sign for 1 year and you want to keep your options open, do that. But just know that we know that, and like that can affect what we do with you and what you do here.
But I can understand where Butch is coming from, and well, I mean, sympathize that like this isn't
100%.
This isn't the industry. This isn't the sport that he.
No, it's not at all. And he was also talking about it, and you got the feeling that. You know, one of the things that he and I know that Hugh Freeze and Bruce Pearl are very similar to this. One of the things they love to pitch is Auburn, the family, the feeling, and being a part of that and saying, that doesn't really matter right now. It's what can I get? What am I going to get right now? To your point, Justin, I think it would be wonderful if there could be multi-year contracts offered and signed. Because if you have that, then you can get back to pitching going, you know, not – because right now those kids, a lot of these kids aren't even thinking about it. They're going, well, if I don't like it here, I'm going to be gone. So what do I care about the family atmosphere or the long term? They're not worried about long term. But if they're realizing they're going to be at a place for at least 2 years – then you have to think a little bit beyond right now.
Mm-hmm. And when you stand to lose practically everyone after every season, right? When you're developing freshmen who have the option to leave when the season is over, it does sort of, I mean, it limits the talents of a developer compared to, I mean, it's not that Butch Thompson isn't an eminently qualified college baseball coach, but I mean, I can understand his frustration with the landscape, and I can understand how some of the things he's best at have been sort of neutralized by the rules and the transfer rules that have been implemented.
Well, you know, Hugh has talked about this a good bit. I mean, when you have coaches, and I think in the major sports, Auburn has coaches that are very similar in their emotions and. The way they want to recruit young men to be part of the family culture, chemistry, you know what I'm talking about, that, and it's very difficult when that really could be cared much less about by a lot of the recruits that they're going out and talking to. So yes, I can see, you know, we've seen quite a few long time, you know, older coaches go, hey, this isn't going to work for me. And I think you'll see more and more of that, and they'll probably get younger. But ones that have been around for a long time and just feel like that this isn't the sport that they had that they had loved and grown up, trying to recruit players to.
Speaking of like NCAA rules and regulations and stuff, the Protect the Ball Act is that we can talk about that a little bit when we come back.
Yeah, there are a couple of things. We can get to those as well. Again, we'd love your input. Give us a call, 334-321-1390. We're just a quarter of the way in here on the Thursday Drive.
To be a part of the drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email thedrive@espnau.com.
Welcome back into the drive here on this Thursday afternoon. Bill, Dan, Justin Ferguson from the Auburn Observer. Before we continue, Ferg, talk a little bit about what all has been going on and is coming up with the Observer.
Yeah, so we've got a mailbag coming out tomorrow. A lot of stuff talking about expectations for football and basketball. A lot of good stuff in there. When we get done doing the show today, Dan and I are going to be joined by my buddy Max Olson from The Athletic, talking some college football, transfer portal, a lot of fun stuff with him. So that'll come out tomorrow morning as well. And yeah, this week did a story from Hoover yesterday, talking to Hugh Freeze about the transfer portal, among other things, at the Region's Tradition. So you can check that out. A lot of insight there. What they're looking for in the transfer portal still remaining, what he thinks about the guys they were able to bring in. Yeah, you can check that out. And then, you know, wrote a story earlier this week on Auburn's edge rushers, those that freshman class coming in. I feel like there's a lot of attention paid towards the wide receivers, and for good reason. Right. A lot of people are excited. But, man, sometimes it can be easy to forget that Auburn had two guys at edge rusher that were five stars by at least one outlet coming in this year, and they both got to go through spring ball and really good returns, and then you throw in a guy like Joe Phillips. So, yeah, check that out, auburnobserver.com. A lot of stuff there. $60 a month or $60 a year.
Yeah, so definitely want to take advantage of that. We were talking as we went to the bottom of the hour. You had one thing in mind. I had another story in mind. There are a couple of things coming out. Let's get to the Protect the Ball Act. I had not seen that, and that would really be a change in direction.
Introduced Wednesday by two Republican congressmen, including Barry Moore, who represents Dothan and Troy and parts of Montgomery as the second district of Alabama. He's one of the two sponsors of the Protect the Ball Act, which would, reading the press release from Barry Moore's website about this, the Protect the Ball Act addresses the onslaught of litigation universities and conferences face relating to student-athletes' abilities to receive compensation based on their name, image, and likeness. The language provides a legal safe harbor for universities, conferences, and the NCAA to provide new benefits for student-athletes, establish and enforce rules, and comply with the law without the constant risk of litigation, unquote. A easy way to say it would be that it would make it it would make it very difficult, if not illegal, to sue universities, conferences, or the NCAA in the United States, if this law were to be adopted. I think that's we were discussing. You know, the NCAA is operating under constant threat of lawsuit with virtually any rule. You know, some folks have thought, well, that means a legal body like Congress needs to step in and either establish the rules themselves or give the NCAA more power. This would be kind of a roundabout way to give the NCAA more power, because it would
it would be a pretty, that's not roundabout, that's a pretty straightforward way of giving them more power. I just wondered, would universities be able to sue the NCAA? I mean, because remember there have been times when the NCAA has handed out penalties and the schools have then said, no, we're going to sue you. I guess I would imagine that this would probably include even members wouldn't be able to sue the NCAA.
It seems as though the goal of this law.
This is more for the players.
Yeah, for the
athletes.
Yes, it seems as though the goal of this law would be to allow the NCAA and the conferences to make rules without concern that those rules will be struck down in a court of law. Now, you can question if a rule can be struck down in a court of law, not to sound like the bad guy from No Country for Old Men, but of what use was the rule if the rule doesn't stand up in front of a judge? But that's where there's language in here about the need for all 50 states to be operating under the same set of rules, which I do think is underreported but probably important. Like you probably shouldn't have an NCAA where, well, in this state, the universities can be directly involved with the NIL but in this state it's illegal for that to do so. A uniform set of rules probably is in the best interests. I'm not sure this is the best way to get there, but it does seem like, you know, we're moving towards people taking action to make sure there's a set of rules that apply to everyone and not different rules depending on what region of the country you're in.
Yeah, that one, I just wonder, you think that has a chance of passing?
I don't
think so at all.
I don't know how it breaks down on partisan lines, but I have to imagine that there are people from all over the country that would have reservations about giving the NCAA, making them lawsuit proof. Right? Like, I don't know if that's I mean, it would be effective in helping the NCAA and the conferences set their own rules, but the NCAA and the conferences were setting their own rules years ago, and then they lost a bunch of court battles, mm-hmm. right? Like, so maybe the rules they had in the first place weren't.
I'm guessing this is an attempt to come up with an alternate solution to the the proposals.
So there are seven different bills out there from different congressmen that relate in some way to regulating the NCAA or the NIL space, and this is one of those seven, and it has a bit of a local twist because Barry Moore is representing a part of our listening area in Congress right now, and he's one of the two sponsors of this thing. Ball stands for something. It's protect the benefits for athletes and limit liability, BALL. So, you know, they got
I'm sure
they started with protect the ball, and then they had to figure out how to make something. But that's there's legislation that is nominally, you know, it says it's supporting student athletes, but I think the end result would be you make the NCAA lawsuit proof. So we'll see if that flies.
All right. Meanwhile, there's still talk about the possible settlement agreements being reached around
Justin
the
Ferguson, antitrust
lawsuits.
Justin Ferguson not on board with making the NCAA lawsuit proof?
No.
Okay.
I just don't see that one flying. No. I don't. Now, what I was thinking about was a story that Ross Dellinger wrote on Yahoo about a part of one of the proposed settlements where it was talking about taking away scholarship limits from some sports. He said part of that included a reduction in the overall roster size.
Yes.
When you're not, so that there wouldn't be any difference in roster size and scholarship limits, because every player on a roster would be eligible to receive benefits, and that would could possibly reduce the college football roster to 85. Now, some folks will go, well, that's what it is now. No. Mm-mm. The roster is about 110. As a matter of fact, the NCAA, I think just in the last few months.
Is there a limit to the number of players you can dress at home? For some reason, I wanted to say those limits really only apply like on the road. Right?
It's usually conference type rules. I believe it's 70.
Yeah, okay.
But the NCAA, not too long ago, said that roster sizes could be as much as 120. So that would be reducing the overall roster size, including walk-ons. Basically, what perked my ears when I first heard little talk of this is would be no more walk-ons. And I thought, oh, that's rough. But when you think about it, everyone on the roster would be entitled to whatever benefits this agreement would be reached for athletes.
If student athletes are deemed employees,
right,
which is a possible, so the,
there's no such thing as a walk-on. Yeah, they'd all just be student athletes who are being compensated.
Yeah, and I know this is starting to sound more and more like an episode of LA Law or something, but like the lawsuit in California, the House versus NCAA, mm-hmm. There's past student athletes suing the NCAA,
right,
over lost wages, and there are current student athletes suing the NCAA over the rules that they have in place, saying that the rules the NCAA has implemented limit these athletes' ability to earn in the NIL space. One of those rules is scholarship limitations. The argument that if schools could offer however many scholarships they wanted to, if there was not an artificial limit in place, there are athletes that would be able to get to the SEC or the Big Ten or the ACC that way. And because those limits are in place, those athletes can't do it and they can't make as much money. Scholarship limitations could fall in the NCAA settlement for House versus NCAA, but roster restrictions...
Roster limits then would limit your scholarship.
Yes, you would turn scholarship limitations into roster restrictions.
Right.
Everyone on the roster can be on scholarship, but you can only have a certain number of players on the roster. And if student-athletes are deemed employees, that would be crucial because I think teams would want their rosters to be as small as possible while still being effective. You know, mm-hmm.
Well, I mean, we're moving more and more, even though, we don't have the multi-year contracts like we were talking a while ago. But a lot of things keep moving more and more to the professional model, which is smaller rosters. I mean, you know, in the NFL, you've got a 53-man active roster.
I would absolutely brace for the possibility that if student athletes are deemed employees, walk-ons become a thing of the past.
Yes.
Like players that were not, yeah. you know, like maybe there's... I mean, maybe you can
you
have
can find a way to do practice squads.
Like, I was going to say, like, what are the dudes like the dudes who help women's basketball teams? You know, what I mean, like the practice squad players they've got there. Like, they're not on the team, but they've got some sort of designation to you know to help out in practice or something. Like, there's you know, like maybe you can be a student assistant or something, but actually on the team, I would expect those numbers to drop once. And it's weird to say this, but it's like I would expect that to change. Once student athletes are classified as employees, and we're not talking about it like, oh, Matt, you know, if one day student, like, no, this ball.
No,
is,
I think it's when
this ball is rolling down the hill, and it may be this year where something falls that says, you know what, student athletes are employees of the university.
I in the story, I didn't realize this. Right now, in the FCS roster limit is 85.
Okay,
mm-hmm. So you can't have more. You can only have 63 players that have any part of a scholarship in the FCS.
There's virtually, there's virtually no way to, I don't know. I mean, there doesn't seem to be a way forward with like if House versus NCAA gets settled, it's going to be settled with student athletes being deemed employees. Like mm-hmm. that'll be one of the elements of the settlement. And that's the lawsuit that if it goes to trial and the NCAA loses,
that's the one that's going to cost them billions.
That's the antitrust lawsuit with a $1.4 billion judgment that would be tripled if the NCAA lost because of antitrust. So, yeah, if they were to lose, that could be tripled to over $4 billion mm-hmm. You know, on the hook.
So they are working hard to get that settled. Yeah. All right, we'll get to our final break of hour number one.
I would rather not lose $4 billion in a lawsuit if it were me. Justin, well, you've been through that.
It wouldn't make much difference if I lost a billion.
Auburn Observer.
If I lose a million, I mean, it'll be about the same as losing $4 billion. We'll get to our final break of hour number one. Come on in and join us here on the Thursday Drive.
For air that's cool and clean, call SensorGram
1067 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390, toll free at 888-382-7502, or email thedrive@espnau.com.
Welcome back into The Drive, final segment of hour number one here on this Thursday afternoon. Bill, Dan, and Justin Ferguson from the Auburn Observer. Love for you to join in. Anything you want to talk about. I mean, we may have stepped off the court and into court.
Bounced around a little bit there. we were talking about other, I mean, because there are two names that we've been following in the transfer portal that both look like they're trending away from Auburn right now.
Jordan Ivy Kerr, I mean, it definitely is. Yeah. He's committed to Central Florida.
He's committed to UCF and Achor. You know, apparently there is tumultuous, you know, as to whether or not he would be able to.
Apparently some concerns about, him being able to transfer his credits. Back to the drawing.
We were talking about Ivy Curry and how he was a player who left his original school, went and played somewhere for a year.
Yeah, went to Pacific for a year from UTSA,
and then went back to UTSA. And we're seeing more of that in the portal, where guys go somewhere else, and then after a taste of it, decide maybe I had a better deal back in my original home. There's a player who was in Arkansas this past year. Denijay Harris, who was 4-year starter at Southern Miss and went to Arkansas, or 3-year starter at Southern Miss, went to Arkansas for a year, didn't play too much at Arkansas. Now he's going back to Southern Miss. And there's more of, I mean, what was it? Snacks Johnson, the Arkansas corner, who started his career at Baylor, mm-hmm. went and played at Arkansas this
That's
past
right.
year.
Back to Baylor.
Went the portal, he's going back to Baylor. So, I mean, we're seeing guys decide, you know, maybe the grass was greener.
Maybe I didn't need to go, but I mean, it's probably good experience for them to have gone, and fortunate for them that they're able to come back. I mean, that's the thing. I mean, there are probably other players that left different schools and wish they could go
back.
And
the coach lost the number.
And it's like, sorry, that door shut when you left. So, yeah, I don't know. In hour number two, Justin, I want you to talk a little bit about some of the things that Hugh Freeze had to mm-hmm. say. Yesterday up in Birmingham, for the regions, I guess, wasn't it? Yeah.
Yeah. It was the celebrity pro-am. We went up there. We originally Bruce Pearl was originally supposed to be there, but obviously recruiting is still happening.
Yeah, there's things going on.
A little busy right now. And then Charles Barkley was supposed to be there, and he had not shown up by the time we left. But we did get to hear from Hugh Freeze and talk to him for several minutes, and yeah, got some nice info on what are they looking for in the transfer portal left. Even though it's closed, there's still kids out there.
There are players in it, though.
Yeah, there's still kids out there they can go get. What does he think of the guys that they were able to bring in? I think Auburn turned out to be one of the most active teams in this second window. Mm-hmm. I think they did a really good job, and so does he. And so just kind of how all that ties into what this 24 roster could look like.
And we'll talk about that and more in hour number two, which is coming up. Stick with us here on the Thursday Drive.
Ford 321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email the drive at espnau.com.
Welcome into hour number two of the Thursday Drive. Boy, it's turned out to be a nice-looking afternoon after some serious rain. Now, we didn't get any strong winds. I mean, we had some.
There was a tornado.
Some decent ones. It was a tornado watch.
Yes, it was a tornado watch for much of the day in the Auburn-Opelika area, and there was some weather that felt like the kind of weather you get, you know, shortly before the sirens start going off and stuff. But no, I don't think there was any actual tornado activity in the area, and so hopefully everybody made it out okay, because it was a scary storm passing through. Seems like it has passed through, Bill. If you take a look at the TV there, seems like there's the weather has cleared up enough for the SEC softball action to resume over on the softball field, with we got LSU Tennessee, I believe, is the early game, and then Missouri Arkansas will be the late game tonight. Some games were moved around because they're going to have to play. They're going to play. How about this? A&M Ole Miss. Is that tomorrow morning? We're getting, or that's it's tomorrow. Okay, tomorrow night is the A&M Ole Miss game. There is a very early game tomorrow. I believe Georgia Florida is okay. They're going to start at 9 a.m. tomorrow, 9 a.m. local time. With Georgia and Florida to get the action going, because they need to get these games in semifinals tomorrow night in the SEC tournament. So that's your action going on. Auburn, of course, eliminated yesterday in the 14th inning walk-off home run by the Georgia Bulldogs. Auburn still projected as – I've seen some places that have Auburn still in the NCAA tournament field.
They're making the NCAA.
I mean, it's
everybody from the SEC.
Yeah, it's not. Tournament. It was not a. I mean, you have to be pretty low in the draw to
you,
be.
You have last season all but one of the. I think it's the last 2 years. I think all but one SEC softball team's made the NCAA tournament. It's, your RPI is just so high, and your strength of schedule. I mean, your metrics are just crazy. As long as you don't completely flatline, you should probably make it. And it's only going to get crazier, because next season, who comes into the SEC? Texas and Oklahoma. Oklahoma's the dynasty of the sport. Texas is the number one team in the country right now. So, yeah, I mean, it's, you know, as I mean, long you're, as you're not maybe, having an actively horrible year, you should make the tournament.
Maybe the two best softball programs in the country, not currently in the SEC. You know, certainly two of the top ones are joining the SEC, with Texas and Oklahoma coming aboard at the end of the season. Auburn will be looking for a coach. Mm-hmm. That's Mickey Dean stepping down at the conclusion of this year, and Auburn will begin the search for Mickey Dean's eventual successor to be the new head coach of the Auburn softball program in this new era of the SEC. 334-321-1390 is the number to dial. You want to get in on the conversation. 334-564-1840 is the drive text box, presented by our friends at Southeastern Industrial Contractors. Skybar presents the hotline. Really appreciative to those folks as well. Justin, you got to hear Hugh Freeze talking some at the up in Hoover. Was that this morning? That was yesterday. Yesterday, you were talking with Hugh Freeze, mm-hmm. along with some of the other members of the beat up at the regions, and Hugh Freeze talking about the targets in the transfer portal that Auburn could be after, where he thinks the roster stands now, the state of college athletics, and a whole lot more. What stood out to you about what Coach Freeze had to say?
Yeah, I think the big thing for me is that they still have a couple of needs in the wants, I should say, in the transfer portal. It's inside linebacker and defensive back to keep an eye on. Freeze saying that he would love one more linebacker. The top name there, Khalil Jacobs, who the South Alabama transfer who visited over the weekend.
Niceville Eagle.
Yeah, he was supposed to visit Missouri last week and didn't. And as of yesterday, he hadn't visited Alabama yet. And so I think Auburn feels like they could be in a solid position to get Khalil Jacobs. DB is a little more interesting where they end up going there. I think the top target they had out there was
Javion Cole.
Was the top one. Ends up going to Texas.
Uh-huh.
And so I don't know where they're going to end up going for another DB. They're not in as desperate of a need, but when you look at linebacker.
I think they really want a little more experience.
They would love a little bit more experience. It's kind of like the thing what they did with Kieron Crawford and some of these other guys. You're looking at bridges out there. You're looking at a guy who's like, hey, look, we've got the top of our depth chart is littered with guys that are coming in to the end of their college football careers. And then we have some really good guys behind them, but they're all young and inexperienced. You look at inside linebacker this year. You've got Eugene Asante, Austin Keys, Dorian Mousey. What you do behind them, you really like. DeMarcus Riddick, you bring in DJ Barber. But then, after the transfer portal, as it stands right now, Robert Woodyard Jr. is the only other linebacker. So if you need, what you're going to do next year, so you just want to try to find some bridges, guys who may have some multiple years of eligibility left, who, you know, might not be household names right off the bat, but can kind of backfill because, you know, from the Harsin era, you've got largely two recruiting classes where you just have – they're gone. They're just not there anymore. And so you need to kind of backfill there. And linebacker's obviously a place where they'd really like to do that. DB, I think, would be a good one as well because, I mean, you look at that defensive back room, a lot of guys with experience and then a bunch of kids. You really like the kids, but you want to find some of those bridges.
You've got pretty much your starters and a bunch of kids.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that'd be
different than what you did on the offensive line with Ronan Chambers, where it was just we needed a 16th guy. Mm-hmm. You wanted another guy who had some experience at tackle because that was the thing there at tackle.
Where do you think he winds up?
So coming out of spring, during spring practices, when they went on the offensive line, Auburn had a walk-on, Evan Richards, on the third team at left tackle. And so we'll see where DeAndre Carter plays. But with Carter and Chambers coming in, you're up to 16, which is the number that Freeze wants. Either tackle spot makes sense. If you're talking about maybe more pressing need right now, probably right tackle. If you think Tyler Johnson's going to be a guy who's going to be ready to go behind what you got out of the transfer portal in Percy Lewis. Right tackle, you got too tall. And then it's a little bit more up in the air. Is it a JUCO kid? Is it a kid further down? I think long term, they'd love to see like a guy like Favor Edwin turn into that, but he's going to need some more time. He's a developmental piece, so maybe right tackle is kind of the
Seth
kind of
Wilford
thing
will also probably be in the
yeah,
long term.
I was blanking about on the name, but
long term option there. But I would think like we were asking yesterday, as it stands now, like what would be the plan if something happened to one of your two tackles? As it stands now, what would be the plan if something happened to one of your two guards?
I think the answer to that is the same one, and I think it's Jaden Muskrat, and then you shuffle. And Muskrat can play tackle or guard, and if it's a situation, say something happens to Percy Lewis at left tackle, well, you know Dylan Wade can play out there, and you can kind of kick around and shuffle the way you want to do. If something happens at guard, I think Jaden Muskrat's going to be next man. Like, it's important, I think, to have
I wonder if Tyler would maybe get the nod at tackle over Muskrat. I don't know the answer to that, but they do seem to like Tyler. But that's maybe where
it's left tackle.
That's also where Chambers could maybe fit in because that's a spot where he could be.
He's played both left and right tackle.
I think when you go and get a guy like Ronan Chambers, it's not that you don't believe in a guy like Tyler Johnson. It's just like, man, you want to have that insurance. Yeah, and again, this is a guy who played at Akron, was going to go to Tulane. He comes to Auburn. You're not expecting him to be an all-SEC offensive lineman. You're just expecting him to say, hey, if we need you, go out there and hold your own? And when you played at a place like Akron, you've played against some decent teams. Like, obviously, he was a MAC guy, but Akron's played some really big programs. So he's at least got, it reminds me of when, they went out and got Oh, man, why am I blanking on his name?
Jack Driscoll.
Jack Driscoll, yeah. It was like,
saw him this weekend. He was here for graduation.
The big thing for Jack Driscoll is like, okay, yes, you were at UMass, but you played in Neyland. You played at, you know, all these, and that helps. That helps when you make that transition.
Well, I mean, I'm thinking also, I mean, I remember when Auburn signed a couple of guys, the less touted transfer was Casey Dunn. Thought, well, okay, he's just there for insurance. And no, he was a starter, and he was a really good. Yeah, you never know.
It was like a big guard from Florida State, and Casey Dunn.
That's right. I'm blanking on the guards name.
And you didn't see big Florida State
320 or so from Florida State.
Big reserve O lineman on the 2017 team, and Casey Dunn steps in.
He'd been like
center.
A 4-star in high school, and Casey Dunn was like a 2-star in high school. Yeah. That's why people were excited.
Casey Dunn was just a good FCS offensive lineman. But we talked about this on our podcast earlier this week. You go look at the offensive line. Go look at the NFL. I mean, offensive line is the one position group that is the toughest to evaluate, the toughest to develop, and the toughest to unleash.
Because there is development. I mean, you know, some guys, you know, are peak when they're 20.
Yeah.
Others, you know, it takes until they're 21, 22. I mean, some guys peak. Some guys don't grow or get much more athletic than when they're 18 years old.
You look at the Pro Bowlers in the NFL and the All-Pro guys on the offensive line. Recently, Notre Dame and Oklahoma, because they just become factories for offensive lines, you'll start to see more of those guys there. But, I mean, you know, you look at a guy like Jason Kelce, you know, who was not – a highly touted recruit coming out of high school. I mean, there are Super Bowl winning teams and Pro Bowl caliber offensive linemen. Like, you go get them from D2 schools. You go get them from FCS schools.
Oh, yeah.
And it's like, that is the one position group where it's like, it ain't about the stars next to your name right off the bat. That's the one, because it's so hard to evaluate. You know, you don't want to pick. I don't want to pick on certain guys, but any Auburn fan listening to this can remember multiple big name offensive line recruits that didn't pan out. Meanwhile, the Casey Dunns and the Jack Driscolls, you know, do pan out. And it's just that's the one position group. Like, some positions, you throw enough talent at it, you throw enough stars at it, it's going to work out. Some positions, it's like it's a crapshoot, really. And offensive line, I think, is going to be that one spot.
I was trying to remember the name of the
Wilson Bell.
Trying to remember the name
Wilson
of the
Bell.
Trying to remember the name of the
man. So here's why. So I remembered the name Bell, and then I thought Kamar Bell, and because Kamar Bell ended up going to Florida State after all. And I was like, so it's not Bell. No, it was Wilson Bell.
By the way, Jack Driscoll appeared in 54 games for the Eagles over the last 4 years, 17 starts in that time, was signed by the Dolphins this offseason. He was in town for graduation last week, got to see Jack again. But it's been he's a guy, you know, I think pre-transfer portal, the NFL was finding offensive linemen from just about everywhere, right? Mm-hmm. Like they'd come from anywhere. And now it seems like those players are matriculating to the highest level of college football
finished. Finding them a little bit quicker now.
Alabama State had a first-round pick at lineman a couple of years ago.
Went to the Texans.
Yeah, and it's like I feel like it would be very difficult for – I mean, maybe
for
we'll
guys
still
to finish at those schools.
Yeah, maybe we'll still see a guy, you know, who just played for an FCS school go in the first round after that season. But it feels like now, you know,
well,
players –
if you get back to scholarship limits of 75, 85, that will actually help some of the smaller schools.
Also wanted to look this up, and Auburn didn't sign Champ Anthony until
it was late.
It was after June 1st.
I mean,
Champ Anthony committed to Auburn on June 4th.
I was thinking it was after just about everybody had their rosters they thought set for the fall.
So maybe spending a big chunk of May continuing your evaluation of the transfer portal to see what kind of roster, you know, what's where you need to round out your roster. Look, you don't want to be looking for crucial pieces of your roster.
You hope you're not looking for starters
right now. No, don't want to be doing that. Spring practice probably didn't go all that great, or the transfer portal hit you really hard afterward.
Or you're in your first year and you're trying to get caught up in recruiting, and you know, that's sort of what happened to Hugh Freeze a year ago, is they're trying to, you know, bring in as much young talent and try to get in with coaches and players that they were a year behind in trying to recruit.
But just like we've been saying, it'd be great if Bruce Pearl could find a Javon McCormick type to spend a year as the backup point guard and maybe start the following year. with Auburn, I think they'd love to find a Champ Anthony type in the next 6 weeks, who is a junior college defensive back who can come in, would be eager
or,
for the
or a guy who's just in the transfer portal.
Yeah, doesn't matter where he's coming from, but just you know, someone who with multiple years of eligibility remaining, who could play as needed this year and maybe have a much bigger role in the 25.
This linebacker from South Alabama would be a great example of that. Yeah, he was super productive last season.
Oh, he really was. I mean, he's very very athletic. I get the feeling Alabama's slow playing him. I think they're trying to determine whether they have a spot or not for him.
Yeah, because he hasn't made that visit yet. And
right,
he was supposed to go to Missouri and he didn't. Mm-hmm.
I think he wants to stay closer to home.
Yeah, no, and I don't blame him. And obviously Alabama's got the edge, you would think, because of Kane Womack. But
sure.
I mean, if Auburn can be a team that, because to me, you watch him, he seems to be like a guy that you could see, okay, that Eugene Asante role, he could do that for you. He could give you that depth right now and maybe be a guy for you in the future, along with, obviously, with like a guy like DeMarcus Riddick, who's got a lot of that to his game as well.
If Khalil Jacobs' family is still in Niceville, 850, if they're still in Niceville, Florida, Auburn is about as close, Auburn is as close of any Power 5 school, right there with Florida State, to the Niceville area. If you want to stay close to home and play in the major conference level from Niceville.
Auburn's the closest SEC school by far.
Auburn's the closest SEC school. I'd say your next closest is either Tuscaloosa or Starkville.
Yeah.
And that's, they're both close. They're both closer than Gainesville from Niceville. And then
they're definitely both closer than Gainesville.
Yeah, I mean, Troy's probably the closest D1 school, period. But I would say, if you want to play in the major conference level, it's Auburn. And that would certainly, if staying local is a priority at all, that would seemingly give Auburn a chance to give them a leg up over anybody else, considering the kids from Northwest Florida.
Hey, I got a local update real quick, just very small. If y'all are interested, high school soccer, Auburn High is up in the Final Four.
That's not uncommon.
Yeah, not uncommon. They are up. Auburn High. The Auburn High girls are up 2-0 at the half against McGill Toolin. So pretty good start right there for the Tigers. And if I remember correctly, it's both the boys and the girls are up there right now. So yeah, good looking there for the Tigers.
I'm glad you mentioned that, Justin, because I want to ask you about Omar Mobson. You've got to
you
see him.
You want to tell? Yeah, I could do a whole segment on Omar
Mobson.
You've got to
see.
You got
to see him play.
Yeah,
you want to talk? You want to talk some Omar Mobson when we come back? Because that's a cool local story and something that's in the news of late.
All right, we will get to our first break. Love for you to join in 334-321-1390. That's the Drive Hotline here on the Thursday Drive.
Chandler here from University Ace Hardware.
1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email us at thedrive@espnau.com.
Welcome back into The Drive here on this Thursday afternoon. Bill, Dan, Justin Ferguson from the Auburn Observer. And yeah, as we were going to break, we'll get into some more of Hugh Freeze's comments, but a player that just got an offer from Auburn, Justin covered and watched some of young Omar Mobson this past year.
Yeah, no, Omar Mobson, Auburn High running back.
Apologies, I called him Mobson. Omar Mobson.
Yeah, he's a class of 26 kid.
Yeah,
so he just finished his sophomore year at Auburn High, picking up an offer from Auburn yesterday. Got an offer from Missouri early in the week.
I was trying to remember the
Mizzou
other school.
Mizzou was in town. Obviously, there's connections there with that staff and the local area. I think when you look at a player who accomplished as much as he did as a 10th grader at 7A football,
mm-hmm.
it's really, really impressive.
7A football in this region?
In this region. So I covered a handful of Auburn High games this past season for the OA News, stringing for him. I also wrote – so Omar Mobson was the OA News's breakout player of the year, and I wrote that story on him. So I did a feature several months ago on Omar, so I'm pretty well-versed in kind of what his season was, what he brings to the table. Going back through his numbers last year, it's kind of crazy. He had his first big game at the varsity level. Just got a handful of carries against Hoover. Then he goes on this tear where it's 83 yards, 83, 140, 35, but they had four carries in that game. 100, 101, 143, 102, 118, 136, 174, and 125. Here's the thing. He wasn't even starting running back. The most carries he got in a game last year was 21. He was usually around a dozen or so carries a game, and he was routinely getting 100-yard outings. He's a really special running back, local kid. It felt like it was a matter of time before big-time teams started calling. No-brainer for Auburn to take a look at him because, he's, like you said, if you're producing like that at this level in this area as a 10th grader, as a running back, he's a pretty special kid. Great teammate, great kid, comes from a really good family. You know, all the stuff that you want off the field, on the field, this guy's really good. And I think, there are a few times where I've been able to kind of put my stamp on just like, yeah, this kid, you're going to want to watch him and he's going to be worth the price of admission. I think it's going to be Mapp's going to be interesting to see.
It's always fun when you see a high school player.
Yeah, and you feel like, oh, you sort of discovered him.
And it's cool. It's cool. And I think local area, again, we will see kind of what level. Like, he has offers, but we'll see who gets serious about him, what kind of level teams get serious about him over the next couple of years. Another guy that I saw for a couple of years, in the local area that I was really high on was J.C. Hart. Now, obviously, J.C. Hart was coming from Lochapoca, and it was like, I don't know if SEC was thinking. Well, he obviously made that work. Mapson's another one of those kids where he's like, just from early in his career, you're like, man, that's just different. It just looks different than everybody else. Really good size, too, for a kid, again, who still has 2 years of high school football left.
There were some reporters in the local area. Some folks thought that that the receiver from Phoenix City, Cam Coleman, might have a decent future.
Everybody saw him. He was all right, yeah. Yeah, no, that's the thing. It's like, you can see those five-star kids, and it's like, well, it's obvious, right? It jumps off. And Cam was just, I think one of one when it comes to, being a local, prospect around here. But, it's always special when you see some of these guys who really, kind of come out from, under the radar. To kind of get to that point. And again, the other thing with Cam Coleman, too, is that Cam, again, young for his class and really didn't break out a ton until right before his senior year. And that's when it was like, oh, wow, this dude's one of the best players in the country. There's been a couple of those guys. JC was the one that immediately came to mind for me. Caden Story, who was at Clemson, from Lynette. That's another big one. And then obviously there's like the obvious ones, like all the central wide receivers. Jake Bentley. I remember covering Jake Bentley in high school, and you're like, wow, that's college quarterback, playing with a bunch of high schoolers right now.
I got to see. I don't know if I saw a D1 quarterback in my time in high school football. I got to see. I mean, I saw Danny Werfel when I was a kid. That doesn't really count though.
Yeah.
But like I saw, playing for Fulton Beach. I got to see DJ Hall a couple of times. You could tell DJ Hall, a former Alabama wide receiver. You could tell he was a D1 athlete from the moment he got on the field.
I saw Julio Jones when he was in high school.
Pretty good.
And it was just like
he looked like a man.
Yeah, it was a monster running around.
Cromartie's still the gold standard of high school. Seeing Antonio Cromartie play a high school football game was still the one to me where it's like, oh, this is somebody from another planet playing. Because Cromartie was like, he only started a handful of games at Florida State and still went in the first round of the NFL draft. Like, the athleticism was off the charts, and it was like, oh, he can do things as a 6'3", 6'4", corner that other guys can't do. But it was seeing him in high school.
The only other one I can say, like, super up close where I was just like, whoa. And it was in basketball. When I was in high school, we were at a team camp one time. And LaFleur was there with DeMarcus Cousins. So I gotta say, Boogie at the peak of his high school powers, and you're just like, what? I don't know how anybody else is supposed to hang with this guy.
No kidding.
But yeah, that's it's always cool to see those kids like that, really, really pop off. And obviously, I mean, Auburn High, you think about, and I know Auburn University fans don't want to hear this very often, but you gotta think about, they had Reuben Foster, Rashawn Evans playing next to each other. These are two NFL linebackers.
Well, Rashawn was more of a rush end, and Reuben was the middle linebacker.
It's a crazy amount of talent for sure. And there's been plenty of that local talent. Like, Bill, you obviously would remember this, but like, I would love to see DeMarcus Ware was like when he was in high school.
Well, he was a.
We talked about this earlier in the week.
Yeah, we were talking about him yesterday. I mean, he hadn't filled out. I mean, he was a tall safety slash receiver, basically.
And then he ends up being one of the best pass rushers of his generation.
That's wild. It didn't jump out at you because he was a 4'6" mm-hmm. kind of guy as a safety and receiver, which isn't blazing. The thing is, 40 pounds later, he's still a 4'6" guy.
Yeah.
You know, destroying quarterbacks.
Yeah, it's just – and then, you know, for him being a Troy guy and – during those glory days of Troy, you did not think of Troy for defense. It was the air raid. It was it was the, you know, high scoring offenses. And then it's like, no, they had a Hall of Famer at defensive end there, and it's crazy.
You were mentioning that Cam Coleman didn't really break out until the 2023 season. It's amazing thing. I mean,
it's because they've had so many great receivers. They sort of take their turns. Yeah. This guy's the first one. The other guy's not the primary.
In 22, the buzz was around Carmelo English, mm-hmm. who was still in the portal, having left Michigan after the spring. And there's been
before that, it was E.J. Williams, and before that, it was Justin Ross, and before that,
we were saying in the case of Carmelo English, who we've heard nothing about as far as interest from Auburn a guy who was an Auburn commit back in 22 before decommitting from Auburn going to Michigan. But that's because Auburn already landed. I mean, they signed a lot of potential in that wide receiver room. And I think maybe if Auburn hadn't done as well in the high school ranks, they'd be kicking the tires on guys like Caleb, like Caleb Burton, you know, guys who went somewhere else. And
I think when they entered and, you know, asked Hugh Freeze about this yesterday, it was like when they entered the portal, the second window, they were looking for experience. They like what they have, obviously, with Cam. And as he said yesterday, he's like, we think Perry Thompson has everything it takes to play right away, but we just haven't coached him yet. We don't know for sure. It's just, you know, you got Robert. And it's like, you know, the term in terms of experience. And so to get a guy like Keandre Lambert-Smith was very big because, could you have gone after a guy like Carmelo English and bet on upside for the future? Sure. But what you need right now is you need that floor to be stabilized. You need somebody you got to get. And the thing with Keandre Lambert-Smith, as we talked about when he committed, is that positionally he fits perfectly with what Auburn needs. You love what you have out of Cam, you know, Perry, Cam to Brown, guys like that. And then you got some slot guys and shifty guys. You need somebody who can go win on the outside who might not necessarily be the 6'5", 6'6", or, you know, go up and get it. Now, he can do that, but
Lambert's the only guy on the team who has consistently won. I mean, and you could argue how consistent was it at Penn State. I get that. But
yeah, that's one of the problems. I mean, Penn State people will tell you that was his problem. Yeah. That was the biggest problem was – he'd be fantastic and then not consistent.
Even if he was inconsistent about it, he's done it more at the Power 5 level than any other receiver on this roster right now. Like
And I think your best case scenario for a team like, and I don't want this to sound like a slam on Keandre Lambert-Smith because I think he's a really good receiver. To me, when you look at Keandre Lambert-Smith and you look at his, you know, his game and his body of work, I think he is an excellent, if he is your number two guy, I think that's excellent. And maybe a guy like Cam Coleman can end up being that guy for you right away. But, you know, he was the number one at Penn State last season kind of by default. Like, he had to do that. At a place like Auburn where he can be playing off of Cam Coleman, Perry Thompson, Robert Lewis, you know, some of those guys like that, maybe, you know. And he could end up being Auburn's leading receiver this year in yards. And that. But, like, man, it's hard to – you don't want to pump up Cam Coleman too much, but you just watch him and you're just like, man, it's going to be hard. It's going to be hard to pick anybody else when you know, gun to your head, who's going to be Auburn's number one receiver this year. I watched enough of Cam in the spring to be like, it's hard for me to pick anybody
else. And it's unusual
for would be hard for any quarterback not to be tempted to throw it to that guy because he's one of the best I've seen at just tracking the ball. I mean,
he's got some of that where it's like, it's not how fast he is. It's not how – you know, how strong he is. It's not how good his vertical is or how tall he is. And it's not even his hands. It is – he's got that intangible where it's like, that ball is mine. Yep. And that was the thing about
– he adjusts better to the ball than most receivers.
He adjusts better to the ball. He knows when to go up. He knows, you know, when to lunge. It's just the timing's great.
It's
a natural receiver.
Auburn's had athletes that – measured like Jabari Smith
as a
basketball player. Yeah. Auburn had guys that were physically kind of similar to Jabari Smith. Couldn't play like Jabari Smith, right? Like, you think about, like, there are things that make it – there are things that it's not just about Can you run this fast? Can you jump
this? There's a difference between JT Thor and Jabari Smith. Both really good players, but there's a difference between those two guys.
And that's where Cam Coleman is maybe different from even receivers Cam Coleman's size that have come along. It's like, and not that there are a ton of receivers Cam Coleman's size have come along.
Oh, and that's the other thing, too, is like, I think the potential is definitely still there for a guy like Camden Brown, but, you know, there's a difference. There's a difference between a guy like Camden Brown, 3-star coming out of high school, okay, having to work his way into a spot where a guy like Cam Coleman, where everybody's like, yeah, that's an NFL receiver, like right away. That's special. It's rare. It's rare. It's very, very, very rare.
All right, we need to get to our bottom of the hour break. Mark, hang on. You're up when we come back for the final half hour of the Thursday Drive.
With Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7. Online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of the drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502. Or email the drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into the drive here on this Thursday afternoon. Bill, Dan, Justin Ferguson, Drew at the controls. And let's head to the Drive Hotline, sponsored by Skybar. That number again, 334-321-1390. And Mark is up first. Hey, Mark.
What a catch.
Hey, good afternoon, guys.
Hey, Mark.
Hey, you were talking about people you saw in high school. I watched Stan White, when he was with Barry, play Benjamin Russell in the playoffs one year.
Wow, he was pretty polished for a high school kid.
Yes, he was. Now, one thing I want to mention is I think, and I want to get Justin's opinion on this, I think the receiver out of this class that's going to surprise is going to be Malcolm Simmons. I think he may be the best athlete out of the four that they signed this year.
He probably wins. What's 26? What's the long jump record that he just set last week, 2 weeks ago? Something like 26 or 27 feet was what
we
were told.
Well, he won the long jump and high jump.
Yeah, no, he's...
And he set the high school... I mean, he set the region high jump record at 7 foot, too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's crazy.
That guy knows how to find the end zone.
I just
wanted to get your opinion of him.
Justin, have you gotten to see much Malcolm Simmons?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, no, incredible athlete. Reminds me a lot, kind of the ability to, you know, the explosiveness, the speed, the agility. It's a different type of player, although he was brought in to kind of do this. Noah Igbinoghene is the name that immediately came to mind to me. Champion track
great
athlete.
Track athlete.
State record holder. Remember, Noah was a wide receiver before moving to DB. Like, the Auburn's original plan for him was a wide receiver, and, you know, it was kind of easy to see why. Malcolm Simmons is a great athlete, really good player that can kind of – do some of everything for you. He's got good size and strength. He's not one of, you know, he's not huge, but he's not going to be one of those guys that you feel like is going to get out muscled, you know, a ton. He's going to fight, you know, for yardage. He's really good after the catch, you know, and the athleticism is the thing for me that, you know, jumps out. I remember, you know, Auburn High played, played Ben Russell in basketball this year. And I had somebody text me. One of my relatives texted me. They were at the game, and they said, hey, I hear number so-and-so for Ben Russell is going to Auburn. He looks really, really good. And I was like, yeah, they're really excited about him, you know, coming in and with that wide receiver class. And the response was, oh, wait, he's not coming in basketball? Like, he's a football player? I was like, yeah, no, he's a great basketball player, but that ain't even his number one sport.
Yeah, well, he's a really, really good track athlete as well.
So the number, I had the number wrong.
It was 24 something.
The first week of May, Malcolm Simmons soared 24 feet, 11 and a half inches at the 6A Section 3 meet in Trussville. That broke the 20, well, actually, hold on a second. That's a 34-year-old record of 24 feet, 10 inches set by Orlando Waters.
Who was a pretty good receiver himself.
Orlando Waters, also someone who signed with an SEC school right out of high school and played some receiver both in the in college football with Arkansas and then briefly in the NFL. But, yeah, Malcolm Simmons.
He was at Anniston, wasn't he?
State champion 7-foot high jump and a state record 24-foot, 11-and-a-half-inch long jump in earlier today, earlier this week.
And again, with the way high school offenses are and the way quarterback play is and all that, whenever I see, hey, you had 1,000 yards in high school football in a season, I immediately are like, whoa. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's that productivity that he's got. But yeah, explosiveness is the name of the game. I think with him and Bryce Kane, the thing with them is that they're not 5 stars. They're not like the best of the best in this class, but both of them have these physical gifts that could get them on the field pretty early and make an impact if they get all the other stuff down, right? And obviously, in the case of Bryce Kane, he got to come in early. I thought Bryce Kane looked really good in spring practices, mm-hmm. and he's got a speed that's just different level.
He's got another gear.
Yeah, it's another gear. It's like, not quite to this level, but it's like when Auburn brought in Anthony Schwartz and Sean Shivers, you could just tell immediately, it's like, oh, that is track mm-hmm. speed. That is, you know, go out and get it. Malcolm Simmons, again, it's just that explosiveness. You know, you don't set a record like that if you don't have a lot of power and a lot of agility, you know, behind what you do. But yeah,
he's got a lot of juice.
He's great athlete. Again, I thought he got more. You look at his numbers at Ben Russell and you look at what he did. They used him, you know, some carrying the ball as well. I think he got more polish as a receiver. You know, in time, I think he's going to be a really big weapon for them. You know, not as big as obviously as Cam or Perry are, mm-hmm. but like I think you could see where he could fit in easily.
Yeah. I believe Malcolm's Instagram is he at Freak of Nature? Is that correct? I believe.
That sounds right.
I think Malcolm is on Instagram at Freak of Nature with the O in of is a zero. Because he get and there's two E's in nature, so we could get the thing. But that's his, Twitter. Yeah.
It's the athleticism for sure, and I just think it's one of those him and Bryce Kane. If you can get the skill set, you know, we're talking about with Cam how polished he is as a receiver, what he's got, some of those traits right off the bat as a receiver. If they can develop some of that, you see why. You know, that's the other thing about this class. It's not just the fact that Auburn had 2 5-star receivers. So they had 2 5-star receivers and then 2 4-star receivers.
They had two other receivers who would probably be better than any receivers Auburn signed in quite a while.
Exactly. These are really good players, really good prospects. In most years of Auburn football history, mm-hmm. you get a Malcolm Simmons or a Bryce Kane in your class, you are pumping them up mm-hmm. as the guy. And so they're number 3 and number 4 on the rankings.
Simmons 21.6 in the 200 meters as well.
That's moving,
and that's with a 7-foot high jump outdoor, a 6A indoor record, 6'10.5" high jump. I didn't realize the indoor and outdoor things could be. I guess yes. The high jump
you get different records.
Wind aided,
but yeah. So he set the record for the indoor high jump, 6'10.5", and he also set the state record, AHSA state record, 24'11.5" long jump.
That's crazy.
Now, one of the things I wanted to ask you about, yeah. I mean, we were talking
8 yards.
Yeah.
Eight yards.
Yeah,
that's jumping.
That's pretty impressive. Want to be trying to land like that.
It gives me an idea for an idea for a red zone play.
It's the Cam Newton.
Yeah. When you see guys jumping like that, though, I want to see them. They're not going to have that pit to land in.
You got
to
have a crash pad
in
the end zone.
That's going to break your ankles landing like that. No, I wanted to ask you, Justin, we were talking in the first hour, and we talked a good bit of the NIL and the transfer portal and things like that. And Hugh Freeze had some comments about those things.
He's a believer in the contract. He's a believer in saying, like, hey, if you want to sign with us, just let us know how long we can expect you to be around, basically. And I think that makes sense. And he made the point where, you know, he said, when I sign a contract and I try to get out of it, somebody's got to pay. Somebody's got to pay for it. And it's like, and if you do that in a player perspective, I think it was like we were saying earlier, back in the day when you used to make those transfers and you had to sit out a year, mm-hmm. it was to
it would slow people down. They would think twice before mm-hmm. they just jump.
And I think going with a contract or something like that would also make it, you know, it would also make it in a situation where people would, you know, it would just make roster management a lot clearer. And, you know, again, the whole, hey, you have to sit out, not a whole lot of legal backing to it, which is why it doesn't exist anymore. So when we talk about restructuring and what college sports are going to let moving forward, look, college sports has always been a semi-professional league, and guys were getting paid at some point, you know.
They were getting value.
Yes.
I mean, above board. I mean, mm-hmm. you know.
And if the student athletes were employees, like if student athletes were made employees, a rule like you're ineligible if you transfer is easier to defend
yes.
with the NCAA
yes.
if they have
because
more.
You still owe the other school a year or whatever.
Non-competes may be going away.
Non-competes may be going away, but
that is a wild turn of events.
They could make that and I have heard from someone in the NIL space that especially in the aftermath of like the activity we've seen in the last year, you're seeing more NIL deals with buyouts mm-hmm. on both sides, and you're seeing NIL deals that are voided upon the player going into the portal, like things like that. You know, mm-hmm. NIL, like there's a belief, and Caden Proctor is the one that people are pointing to a lot, where it's like, oh, he went to Iowa and got money, and then left Iowa and went back to Alabama, and I guess some folks are saying maybe some or most or even all of that Iowa money was protected by a contract.
Yeah, he didn't get the Jimbo Fisher deal.
Yeah, and he gave the lion's share, if not all of it, back upon going back to Alabama. Now he might have gotten money going back to Alabama. So I mean, he's probably still doing okay.
That was the whole thing about this thing with NIL, right? When NIL was started, it's like, okay, benefit from your name, image, and likeness. You know, hey, you were worth value in a commercial sense. Hey, we got to do this thing now where we got to find out how much our team can offer you in terms of money. It's not directly coming from us, but it's kind of coming from us. And it's like, let's just get it all.
There's going to be a salary cap. There's going to be roster limits.
It's the difference between endorsements and inducements, right? Like that's what we're talking about. To me, and if there's no way to divorce them, then you got to figure out a system in place. But like, I have no problem with, I guess from a competitive standpoint, I have no problem with a player has achieved so much as a college athlete that he's in a Dr. Pepper commercial or a Nissan commercial or a Gatorade commercial. Or something. Like, that's one thing. But a high school player being offered $250,000 to pick school X on signing day.
That's not what it was supposed to
feels
be.
Feels different than the first one. And if there's no way to, you know, if there's
and
no
way. And
that's
not amateur athletics, so if this is not amateur athletics, let's structure this like it should be, right? Because the whole thing with the NIL was the Olympic model, right? Okay, well, you can't get paid directly by the people that, you know, are, you know, your team, but you can make money off of endorsements and still keep your eligibility. Oh, that's a great idea. But instead, we have this system where you're not getting paid technically by us, but
no,
you
the
basically
collectives are.
We're crowdfunding your salary because any attempt to
crack down on that, it has no legal precedent. It gets shot down. It's a losing battle, a losing proposition. Amateur athletics is dead at the collegiate level. We all know that. Let's just structure it in a way to make it make sense and be more equitable for everyone involved. You're not going to come up with a perfect system. That's why there's things. That's why pro leagues have lockouts. That's why you're never going to solve all your problems. But do something so that for everybody involved, they can at least have an understanding of, we know what's going on. We can be prepared for this. There's transparency. There's, you know, stuff about, and it's just going to be better for everybody involved. Not this whole thing where it's the Wild West and it's like at any moment Team X could come out and say, "Well, if you get into the portal, we'll give you $200,000 or whatever," and it's legal,
right?
And it's legal.
Yeah. So
the only thing stopping you is your own moral, judgment.
Don't let perfect be the enemy of good. You know what I mean? Like, don't,
because everybody knows the amateur system beforehand was not perfect. Otherwise, you wouldn't have had people getting paid illegally, right? You know, like if a scholarship was enough, the value of a collegiate education, especially a lot of these schools, is huge. It is monumental, right? I'm not going to sit here and tell you it's not, but in the eyes of what these guys are bringing in, guys and girls are bringing in terms of value to their university, it is nowhere near. And if it was close, they wouldn't be taking the money, right? You know, people wouldn't have been sticking their neck out and risking getting in trouble to make money off of that. That's why you have to fix it. And this whole, weird in between phase of like, well, you know, this is
in the meantime.
That's where we are right now.
We're not paying you.
We can't pay you directly, but you know, the thing that we advertise at all of our sporting events and tell people to go donate to, that can give you money.
We're in Deadwood. Basically, we're waiting for rules to arrive. Yeah. We're waiting for legislation to arrive. But in the meantime,
and you were talking about it earlier with you know, a guy like Butch Thompson, and Nick Saban's another great example. Like my whole thing about, hey, it's tough to deal. Like there's a difference for me. There's a line, and it changes every day for me. But it's like there's a line between being like, hey, this is tough. I'm not used to this. I'm having a hard time dealing with it, and I don't know how to handle it. Like There's that, and then like whining that like everything's not going your way. There's a difference between that. Because even for a guy like Butch Thompson, who great dude, he's working as hard as he can to make sure like all these coaches are to try to figure it out. It's like you're getting paid a lot of money to do this, but at some point there is a breaking point that it doesn't matter how many millions of dollars you're paying these guys. I mean, Nick Saban was getting paid more money than God to be the head coach at Alabama.
Well, I know we have to get a break. I'll give you one thing that he did say. He said, it's really difficult when you're having to choose. He said, I shouldn't have to choose what's better for me or what's better for the team.
Yeah.
I mean, absolutely. That's tough. We need to get to our final break. Back to wrap things up here on the Thursday Drive.
What's it mean to be a Four Seasons Federal?